Picking up the phone when the fiends gon' land. I'm on for the day, but I should call in. Sleep for them niggas who ain't got no limbs. I be in the back with it on the road shit. Now I'm in the back of the lot with a chauffeur. He gon' act up, I'ma put him in the coffin. Show up at the wake like I'm sorry that you lost them. And I don't do this often. These niggas changing up like they morphin'. And I don't make no sense. The money that you make can't pay no rent. Weezy ass baby said the sky is the limit. Was born with the money, so I'ma die with it.
All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Brooklyn Boxing Podcast. I am joined by Tommy, the Razor Raynone. Thanks for joining me. I appreciate it, man.
Anytime.
Well, right off the bat, man, on the Razor, I'm a big fan of boxing nicknames. Sebastian Fundura recently, he's a young guy coming up. The Towering Inferno, another great name. But the Razor's a pretty good one, so I was curious how you got that.
Oh, I guess I got to give my boy a shout out. He's gotten plenty over the years because I've been asked that question plenty of times. Simple version was I got in a lot of fights as a kid into my teenage years and early adulthood. So probably somewhere around the seventh grade, 13 years old or so, my buddy Brendan Franklin nicknamed me Razor because I kept getting in fights with dudes and cutting them and marking them up. And he just nicknamed me Razor and it stuck.
And I know watching some videos of you telling your story a little bit, obviously like getting in some fights and stuff outside the gym and you didn't get into boxing until a little bit later on. I guess speaking to the gym that you've been at through your career, the Westbury Boxing Gym, you got in there around the age of 17, right?
Yes. Yes. A few months prior to my 18th birthday. Yeah.
And was that strictly just because you kind of had that love to fight, or was it also a push for, maybe a little reform, get out of trouble, that sort of thing? Or was it actually like, I want a boxing career, or was it more just to channel some energy?
All the above. Tell you the truth, I wanted to start boxing as early as 7, 8 years old. Mm-hmm. So I saw Rocky right around that time and I wanted to box, and my family pushed me away from it and figured that it was a phase that would go away. And it never went away. I started watching boxing on a regular basis, probably like 9 or so years old. As insane as it is, Tyson Douglas is the first boxing match that I ever actually watched. A 42-100 world upset, the baddest man on the planet. So, this was something I wanted to do at a very young age. And there's no internet in the 1980s, obviously, in the late 80s, mid 80s, or early 90s for that matter. You got to open up a phone book and kind of try and find a boxing gym, because boxing gyms are real boxing gyms, at least especially in the 80s and 90s, they're not nice neighborhoods. They're all in bad, ghetto type neighborhoods, because that's where the talent comes out of. So I would find a gym here and there, only a few of them on Long Island, but my family wouldn't. I had no way of getting there. And it wasn't until I was 17 years old that I finally had the a way to get to a gym. I moved from Elmont, Long Island to Plainview, Long Island. And then I heard about a gym in Westbury, because there was a fighter there named Willie Wise, who I read about in the newspaper. He had a fight scheduled for Pernell Whitaker that fell through. So I read all about Willie, and then I saw this gym was in Westbury on Post Avenue, and my buddy Brian and me went over there and checked the gym out, and I stayed, and he never came back. So I didn't start till I was 17 years old. If it was up to me, I would have started when I was like 7, 8 years old. And now that I do like personal training, I've been doing personal training for 4 years now, and parents ask me all the time, like, is my kid too young to start boxing? And my answer is always the same. I always tell them, no, you're never too young to learn discipline and have a purpose and a focus and a regimen. And I wish I started when I was 7, 8 years old, because by the time I was 17, going on 18 years old, I already had afflictions. I already had bad habits that I was trying to break that I couldn't. I was already enjoying life, where I really would have been a lot more focused and disciplined had I started at a young age.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you mentioned that, in terms of, a lot of people with their kids or just younger kids starting out, they look to other martial arts. And I think it's important to recognize boxing as a martial art and, sure, give it that respect, where it's, even if you're not pursuing a pro career or you're going to fight, it's still obviously a great discipline to be a part of. And there's a lot, of ways it can benefit you in your life and bringing that discipline and structure to you. So I'm sure
that's exactly what it is. It's discipline and structure. It's repetition. And even if your kid, even if he starts at 7, 8, 9 years old, you don't necessarily have to have him sparring. But if he's in the gym working hard and training, and now he starts caring about his diet and what foods he's putting into his body and things of that nature, he's going to grow as an individual at a very young age and have that kind of discipline that'll carry him into his teenage years and his adulthood. And I wish I had that, because I didn't. I was a loose cannon throughout high school and in my early 20s. And once I started boxing already, I was already trying to do both. I was partying and having fun and chasing girls and doing this and that with my friends. And then I would go to the gym and work hard, train hard. And then on the drive home from the gym, I'd stop at the deli and get an 18 pack. Like, and that was my ritual.
Yeah. And I think it's like, I don't know, you just, when you mention boxing and the discipline it brings and sort of the respect that the sport really deserves in that sense, it gets lost today a lot with, you know, not hating on like the fitness boxing or anything like that. It's great for people to lose weight and get into it that way. But you just don't see that with other disciplines. You don't see like a Taekwondo or karate hit class where you get, you know, moms coming in and you know what I'm trying to say. It's just there's a lot of kind of disrespect thrown towards the fundamentals of the sport.
I mean, listen, there are obviously kickboxing classes and they're kickboxing chains. Like, I love kickboxing is one chain that is a cardio based kind of workout. And now that I've been doing the personal training on a white collar level the last 4 years, I mean, listen, it's a great workout even for the average person, but I mean, it's not real boxing. So there's a good separation between the two. And even with the personal training aspect, the clients that I train, I have a lot of, it's like a revolving door. I always have 6 or 7 different clients, and some of them actually want to spar, and I'll get in the ring with them and spar them. And you know, I'm going 20% on offense and 100% on defense. I'm making the miss and touching them here and there, but I'll ask them from Jump Street, you know, what are your fitness goals? What are you looking to do exactly with this? And a lot of them just want to get in straight shape. They want to learn the discipline. They love boxing. Others legitimately like want to compete. Others want to just spar and get in real good shape and test themselves. So, I mean, there's different levels to everything. And some just want to just hit the pads and get a good cardio workout, you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, just to jump back to, you know, your career. So you get into Westbury, you know, you start training right away. You have an amateur career, right? Around 30 fights or something like that. At that point in your career, you know, were you, I guess you always really wanted to be a pro fighter, right? But did that just reaffirm it in your mind through the success in the amateur career? Were there any doubts through those moments?
Yeah, there were definitely doubts, because in the amateurs, as I said, you know, I was fucking around a lot in the amateurs. I never, and this is the truth, I never ran once in the amateurs. Never went running, never touched a jump rope, and I didn't know how to hit a speed bag. So I would go to the gym and do my best version of a workout. I would go to the gym, I'd spar a lot, I'd hit the pad some with my trainer, shadow box, and just do an ab workout. That was basically my workout. That was my whole boxing regimen. No diversity to my game. It was the same thing every day. And like I said, when I would go home from the gym that Tuesday night or Friday night, it didn't make a difference if it was a weekday or a weekend. It was straight to having fun. It was straight to going out drinking, hanging out with my friends, doing what I had to do. And I look back at it now and I'm like, you know, it's insane. I 19, 20 years old, I would go out till 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, drinking the entire night. And then I'd be at the gym at 10 o'clock in the morning sparring. And the thought of that now, it just blows my mind. You know, like, the thought of even having a six pack and then going to the gym the next day sparring, which I did do once at a blue moon. But back then, I mean, I was really partying. So when I was an amateur, I didn't have the success that I should have had because I wasn't as disciplined as I should have been disciplined. Also, and I look back at my amateur career and I think of these things, I think the karma played a role in it, because if you're not putting the right energy out into the universe and you're not doing the right things, I don't think you're going to be rewarded the right way. And there were some real close decisions against some real good fighters. A couple of them were nationally ranked that I didn't get that I should have got. And then I look at it, I'm like, well, you know what? I was probably 50% of myself because I'm smoking cigarettes, I'm drinking, I'm messing around with drugs, I'm not training right. I didn't deserve those wins, quite honestly. So in a close fight, give it to the guy that actually, you know, cares. Give it to the guy that's actually putting in the hard work and effort. So the amateurs for me, I always knew I had talent. It was just a matter of, can I ever get myself straight outside of the gym? Could I ever get disciplined enough to go a couple of weeks without drinking and actually lock down and do the right things? And I didn't know if that was ever going to happen. So I finally stopped boxing at 23 years old. And at that point in my life, all my friends were starting to travel and really live life and have good experiences, not just going to bars and hanging out, but going to clubs and meeting girls and traveling and doing cool stuff. And I couldn't miss out on that either. So I said, you know what? I'm going to take a couple of years off of boxing. It was supposed to be about a year. Maybe a year and a half. and I'm going to travel with my friends. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to meet chicks. I'm going to get it all out of my system. And then I'm going to start with a clean slate. And that's kind of like saying, I'm going to take a year off of college and I'm going to go back. Most people don't. And you're going to turn it to 2 years, turn it to 2.5 years. And then finally it turned to 3 years and I put the brakes on. And then I finally went back to the gym at 26. And I remember my first sparring session like it was yesterday. It was like starting from scratch again. My cardio was absolutely gone. My rhythm, my anticipation, my timing. I was still slick. I was still a decent fighter. But all those fundamentals, everything went out the window. My cardio was totally shot. So it was starting from scratch. But I changed my life at that point. I really, really started disciplining myself. I learned how to jump rope and started hitting a speed bag and running 4 or 5 miles every night and doing wind sprints and training like an actual fighter and athlete. So to answer your question, it's a long answer, but to answer your question, as far as the amateurs go, there was constant self-doubt to where it got to the point where when I took those 3 years off, nobody thought I was going to come back to boxing. I kept saying, yeah, I'm going to come back and I'm going to turn pro. I'm done with the amateurs. I'm going to come back and I'm going to turn pro. I'm going to start training and I'm going to turn pro immediately. And all my friends were like, yeah, like it's a pipe dream. It's never going to happen. So I started bargaining and negotiating with myself where I was just having too much fun in life. And I had been doing that for so long at 26 years old. It's kind of embedded in your being at that point. It's in your fabric. And at that point, I started negotiating. I said, all right, well, you know what? If I have 1 or 2 pro fights, that'd be good, right? You know what? I got to at least have a couple of pro fights. And then I finally put the brakes on, made my pro debut. And then I was fortunate enough to fight 10 times in my first 13 months as a pro, which is kind of unheard of. I was getting fights left and right. So that forced me to be constantly in shape and disciplined and ready to go.
Yeah, that's the kind of what my next question was leading into. That is obviously like your activity, how active you were early on in your career. I'm sure, you know, you felt like that sense of urgency. You know, you're 26, you want to get right into the mix and get a ball rolling. But back to your like amateur before going pro, like you said, you know, you weren't jumping rope, you weren't running, speed bag, all that. So were you sparring really heavy? And that's why when you got into the pros, you don't spar as much when you're not in a camp, right? Like, were you of that old school sparring mindset through the
amateur? No, I wanted to spar every day in the amateurs. I would spar 5 days a week if I could. All I wanted to do was spar. It was actually the opposite. I'd spar anybody, anywhere, anytime. Didn't matter. I always wanted to spar. So it didn't matter if you walked into the gym and I already did 15 rounds, I wanted to spar. So in the amateurs, again, I didn't have the right coaches around me too either that were like, hey, hand me a jump rope and make me jump rope. You know, I didn't touch a jump rope till my second pro fight. And I think his last name is Harden, Doug Harden. He's a boxing photographer. I was getting ready for my second pro fight. And he's like, Tommy, you don't jump rope? And I said, I don't know how. And he hands me a jump rope and he says, learn. And I'm jumping up and down, making a fool of myself. He's like, keep the jump rope and learn. And within 2 weeks, I was starting to skip on it pretty fast. And then I was flying on it a month later. And now it's like, then it became like a must part of every one of my workouts to begin or finish each workout. And even now to this day, I have to jump rope. I mean, it's a great, you burn more calories jumping rope for 10 minutes than you do running for 30, believe it or not. So it's a great full body workout and something that I was not doing whatsoever in the amateurs along with running. So my only cardio in the amateurs was basically from sparring.
Wow.
The major cardio that you get when you're getting ready for a fight is when you're out there running 4 or 5 miles at a clip. When you're doing wind sprints, you're doing different drills running, then a lot of jump rope and pad work. That's your major cardio. And of course, sparring. In the amateurs, I do a little pad work here and there. It was pretty much just sparring. Zero running and zero jumping rope. And because I had a fast metabolism and because I was young, I just made weight. I made 147 pounds. Like it was nothing. But now when I look back at those days, I said, I definitely could have been fighting 139, but I probably could have fought at 132 if I was actually working out the right way, disciplined, and actually dieted. But, you know, it's like the old saying, you know, wise too late, you know, old too young, wise too late.
Yep. And once you got into the pro ranks, like obviously to touch on that weight thing, like wasn't your first opponent, you know, a heavier guy, a guy with some experience, and I'm sure you were getting in there, you know, Captain Hindsight now, but you're probably thinking, man, that would have been a lot easier if I was fighting down at 135 or 130 or whatever, right? But
yes and no, because by that point I was 26 years old. Remember when I turned pro, yeah. I wasn't making 135. Now in retrospect, I probably could have made 140 had I been dieting.
Were you cutting weight at all?
None whatsoever. No. None. I was just getting on the scale and that was it. Probably my first 20 pro fights or so. So in retrospect, yeah. I mean, if I was cutting weight and I was dieting properly, I maybe could have killed myself to get down to 135, but I definitely could have fought at 140. There's no question about that. So for my pro debut, the guy that I fought, I believe he fought as high as maybe light heavyweight. I know he was at super middleweight for a while. And what happened with that particular fight was there was another kid from Long Island fighting on the card, and he pulled out. And they're like, listen, do you want to fight this guy, Marquise? He's got 10 pro fights, and you know, he's a little bigger than you, but you should be able to handle him. All right, what did I know? I mean, I didn't know anything about the pro game. The promoter just wants his job to be easy. The matchmaker just wants his job to be easy. He just wants to hear you say yes, and then his job is finished. If you say no, he's got to continue to work and find you the right guy. So I was simple to deal with in the beginning. I'm like, yeah, absolutely, I'll fight him. And I had no reservations about the fact that he had 10 pro fights or he was bigger than me. I had trained hard. I was focused and I was ready. And then I went out there and everything went well.
And then how did you prepare for, you know, such an active start to your career? I'm interested in just hearing a little bit about the training camps, you know, within fights, or I believe you even had a couple fights that were like a week apart or less than that. What's the preparation for a schedule like that?
Back then, I was constantly in the gym. So I was at that point, I was dedicated. I was finally dedicated my life. So I was in the gym every single day. And then I was fortunate enough to get fights left, right, and center in the beginning of my career. And it's a combination of a few reasons. There's always a little bit of luck involved. Just like some people get lucky and some people get unlucky. Some people get opportunities. Some people don't get opportunities because right place, right time. There was some luck involved. There were a couple of fights, like my fourth pro fight. I had just fought my third pro fight in Pennsylvania. Beat the guy, came back to New York, and then I got a call from a promoter, want to fight on Thursday in the Bronx. And I was like, okay. I was already in shape. Ray Robinson was fighting. They brought a guy in from Ohio for him. Ray Robinson got injured. And they're like, listen, we got the guy here ready. If you're willing to fight him, I mean, you should beat him easily. And we'll talk to the commission because it was, you can't fight twice in 5 days. But they were four rounders. They talked to the commissioner, who was Ron Scott Stevens at the time. He okayed it. Boom, I went out there, I fought in the Bronx. Now, I didn't make much money for the fight, but I wasn't caring about money back then. You know, so I was, that particular case was a lucky situation for me. I guess it's lucky for the promoters too, because a lot of guys weren't just going to step in on 2 days' notice. I had just fought 5 days earlier, and they asked me on Tuesday. I said yes, and I fought on Thursday. And also,
yeah, you just don't see that. You just don't see that, like, right now, other than, I mean, I guess, you know, Clay Collard, a guy who's been kind of doing that a little bit recently with Top Rank. He's fought, yeah, maybe 4 or 5 times. During this quarantine, but you really don't see it often.
And also from the business aspect, it's a lot easier to stay busy very early in your career because, yeah, you're making next to nothing. Your opponent's making next to nothing. These fights are very easy to put together for a very cheap amount. I mean, I turned pro. I made $600 for my pro debut. If my opponent got $800 plus travel, the fight cost maybe $1,800 to make. You know, so these fights are a lot easier to put together as you move on in your career, and these guys, you start building a following and a record. Who wants $4,000 to fight you? Who wants $5,000 to fight you? Then the business aspect gets involved a lot more and it gets more complicated.
Yep. And, you know, as you continued on in your career, obviously you're racking up fights. And then, you know, down the line, you find yourself fighting at MSG, Yankee Stadium. I'm sure arenas that maybe you did imagine yourself fighting in as a kid, or maybe not. I'd be curious, you know, where was your head at, I guess, on the way up? Were you like, I'm going to be in these big shows, no doubt?
The dream was always Madison Square Garden. Always, 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 always. So to be able to fight there 3 times is something that I'll always cherish. Nassau Coliseum was like a far-off fantasy because there had not been boxing there since, I believe, it was 1986 or 1987. So, I mean, that was a far-off fantasy. You know, it really didn't cross my mind too often. So then when I got the opportunity to fight there, not once but twice in 4 months, I mean, that was amazing. That was obviously towards the end of my career. And there were certain places, even like Hammerstein Ballroom in Manhattan was a big boxing venue. It's a historic venue in general. I had seen concerts there in my teenage years, in my early 20s. So it was always a cool venue I was aware of. But then Luda Bella was doing a lot of Broadway boxing shows there. And guys like Yuri Foreman and Luis Collazo and Paul Malignaggi would be, you know, future world champions would be coming up at that venue. And I used to go see shows there all the time. And the atmosphere was fantastic. So it was always a place that I really wanted to fight. And I was fortunate enough. That was on my bucket list, so to speak, as was the Blue Horizon. So I got to fight at a lot of venues that I wanted to fight at.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy story. I mean, you're coming up, you're watching, you know, Tyson, and then got into boxing later, and then you end up fighting in these crazy venues that, you know, people dream of getting in. So it's pretty cool to to hear that, especially from a guy who didn't know how to jump rope.
Yeah. All right.
But yeah, man, that's awesome. And I was looking also, like, kind of after your career, a few things you got involved with. I was pretty interested in seeing that you were, I believe, a judge, right, alongside Harold Lettelman for a film of a boxing.
Yeah, it was a boxing film festival. It ran 2 years in a row. Bobby Cassidy put that together. A lot of short films and a couple of full length films. And then they had they premiered The Good Son, which was Ray Mancini's documentary, which was on ESPN and all. And they had him there as a guest 1 year. Yeah, so that was cool. That was cool. It was like a 3-day film festival. And hopefully, I'm sure Bobby will bring it back. It was probably like 30 or so films, many of them short films, a lot of them independent. But it was, that was a cool experience. So yeah, I expect that to come back hopefully in 2021 once this pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be very cool to see some more boxing and fight films. Hopefully there's some good ones coming, but yeah. From the judging perspective, obviously judging films totally different, but you know, it just made me think of, man, I wonder what you think about, you know, fighters getting into judging fights. You know, there's obviously always controversy about fights, guys getting robbed, and there's been some kind of crazy decisions through this quarantine, and a lot of talk about, you know, why aren't there more former fighters that are doing the judging, guys who really know what they're watching, stuff like that. Like, what's your opinion on that? Do you have any interest in doing something like that at one point, or no?
Judging, no. My interest would be strictly in commentating. I enjoy commentating, and who knows? I mean, maybe train a fighter, a serious fighter. That involves a huge obligation, a lot of time and effort, and a lot of honesty. You got to build that relationship, and he's got to be loyal to you as loyal as you are to him. Because unlike promoters, there's no contract with the trainer, so you could bring somebody from scratch and get them to 5, 6, 7, 10, and 0, and then they could say, "See you later," and go to another trainer. And you see no money out of it, all that time invested, you know. So I would like to probably get involved with a real fighter down the line, but we'll see. Right now, commentating is my main thing. As far as the judging goes, listen, just because you're a former fighter doesn't mean you're going to be a very good referee or judge, etc. I know Jersey Joe Walcott was a referee and he was a horrible one. So just because, you know, I mean, he blew the whole Ali Liston 2 fight. That was him. That was him.
Yeah.
Just because you are a former fighter doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a good commentator, that you're going to be listen, there are some commentators out there that are former fighters that I think are awful, absolutely awful. And there are guys that never laced up a glove and fought an amateur round, much less a pro round, like Max Gettleman. I think he's excellent. So I don't think the criteria is that you have to be a former fighter to be a boxing judge. As far as being a trainer, I think that's a different ballgame. I think that's a whole different ballgame. I think you really have to have competed and absorbed punches and punishment and been tired to go out there and give your fighter advice on how to bite down and go out there and fight through the storm when you never did it yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to a lot of people kind of talk on that. Obviously, there's a lot of kind of like father-son duos out there, which is a different dynamic. But yeah, I agree. I mean, you need, I would imagine, you know, you need a guy in your corner that's been in there and
listen, there are always exceptions to the rule, like guys like Angelo Dundee. There are always exceptions to the rule. But most fighters, even if it's on an amateur level, Teddy Atlas fought, Emmanuel Stewart fought. They didn't turn professional, but they were in that gym training hard, working hard, taking and receiving punches, and they competed. I mean, it makes a difference.
So in today's game right now for the welterweights, obviously it's kind of on fire, right? I mean, we got a bunch of names. We just saw Errol Spence come off of a win against Danny Garcia. Personally, it was obviously good to see Errol come back after the car accident and he looked strong. But I wasn't overly impressed. I don't know what your general reaction was to his performance.
Listen, a little bit of surprise because there were so many unknowns going into that fight. I was actually thinking about putting a little money on Garcia because I'm saying to myself, this guy went through the windshield of a car and was like, I mean, this guy did serious damage to himself. He ain't going to be better than he used to be. That's for sure. He's not going to be a better fighter. Plus, he's coming off a 16-month layoff since he fought Sean Porter.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't know. But you know what? Errol Spence is a special fighter. The same way Tyson Fury is a special fighter. This is a guy that abused himself for 3.5 years with drugs and alcohol and food and came back. And after a couple of quick tune-ups, gets in the ring with Wilder, who is the boogeyman of the division. And nobody gave Tyson Fury a chance going, you know, that special of a fighter and an athlete and a person. it's a different ballgame. Tyson Fury, that's why I truly believe that Tyson Fury is probably the best heavyweight. He's definitely the best heavyweight since Lennox Lewis, no question about that. But I'd go as far as saying that he might be the best heavyweight since Muhammad Ali. I don't think he's ever going to lose.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, I think he honestly makes pretty easy work out of Joshua. I really think that even, you know, obviously he dominated Wilder in the rematch. But that being said, if I could pick a guy in the heavyweight division that could catch him or beat him right at this moment, I would still be Wilder in my mind, just because he does have this, you know, he could just touch you and it could be over. But I just don't see Joshua like landing a big shot like that. Or
I mean, Wilder almost killed him in the 12th round of the first fight. If he got up from that, that was Wilder's chance. That's it. That's it. I mean, Fury's absolutely got his number now. I wouldn't even want to see a third fight. It would be a waste of time. It would be a one round demolition. It would be a 4 or 5 round demolition job, just like the last fight was.
So with Joshua, do you feel that Fury would just outbox him, or do you think he would march forward like you did against Wilder and look for the finish?
Styles make fights. Obviously, Anthony Joshua is a much more diverse fighter than Wilder is. He isn't a fighter that's just in love with his power. He could box. He gets creative in there. He's technically sound. And I'm sure you noticed in his last fight, I mean, he's developed a hell of an uppercut. A really, really, that's a really dangerous weapon, especially when you're fighting a bigger guy or a guy roughly your size, like a Tyson Fury. So that can be a very effective, that can be a game changer. And you don't see heavyweights. I can't think of a heavyweight since Riddick Bowe that threw an uppercut as good as Anthony Joshua does. So I think that it's a very interesting fight. I think he's a far more talented guy than Wilder. The interesting part is, if you ask me who wins between Wilder and Joshua, I might pick Wilder.
Yeah.
To catch him on the chin. But as far as Fury and Wilder goes, as far as Fury and Joshua goes, I think that Joshua can give Tyson Fury a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. I still pick Fury against anybody. I think he's just so mentally strong and confident in himself that he's always going to find a way to overcome. He's always going to find a way to be victorious. But if anybody can beat him, it's Anthony Joshua.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, definitely fair. And with the confidence that you mentioned with Fury that he has, you know, I just don't see that in Joshua, even though he put on a good performance against Pulev. I think there are moments, I don't know if you would agree, where he, you know, he's not really that killer that he probably was before Ruiz. There's some doubt now, and he knows, you know, he can be heard, and he's
There is doubt. Obviously, the second fight, and that's not Joshua's problem. The second fight, he got himself in tremendous shape, and Ruiz didn't. Yeah. So he went out there and he did what he had to do. But it wasn't the most impressive victory. He won every single round. He did what he was supposed to do, and he got the win. And I think that got some of his self-confidence back. But I saw remnants of that fight going into the pull-off fight, where he was still being very cautious and very selective those first 3-4 rounds before he really hurt him and started getting real confident, letting his hands go. And then he started looking like the Joshua of old. So maybe
he's got a bad thing that he's like that now?
That he's a little tentative?
No. Yeah.
Not necessarily. I mean, because I think he's an intellectual fighter. He has a boxing IQ. He's a cerebral guy to begin with. So I think that, you know what, maybe him getting knocked off his high horse might have helped him, because he might have been a little too overconfident. Because remember, he had been hurt before. Besides Klitschko dropping him, he got buzzed against Dillian White. Yeah. He had been hurt before, and he had showed character and overcome those spots and those tough situations and gotten victories before. Wasn't able to do it against Ruiz. So to be able to come back and then beat him in the rematch is definitely a confidence booster. I think that Joshua has shown a lot of character throughout his career now, because that's 3 separate opponents and 3 separate fights that he had to overcome in.
Pavetkin as well, I believe, even buzzed him. Yeah.
Pavetkin definitely buzzed him as well. So I think it's an excellent fight. I definitely think it's an excellent fight. I mean, there's no way. This isn't going to be a one-way train wreck one way or the other. I think it's a very competitive fight that might come down to those championship rounds. But I just think that Tyson Fury is just such a special individual. It's not just the skill, it's also the will.
Right.
And the guy is just so confident in himself. I mean, listen, I'm sure you felt the same way that I did. Going into that Wilder rematch, when he said it, he's going to back Wilder up and come to him, I'm like, are you out of your mind? At that point, I pretty much changed my pick. I was in Atlantic City with my buddy. We were going to bet money out at the sports book because Wilder was a 2-1 favorite. Then all of a sudden, Fury gets on the scale and he's 270 pounds. And I'm like, And then he gives an interview and he says, no, I'm going to come forward. I'm going to go right to him and I'm going to knock him out. And I'm saying, no way. You don't go after a puncher like that. And him himself, he's going against his natural attributes. He's a guy that sets traps. He's slick. He's quick. He's unorthodox. Him going to Wilder is suicide. Prove me wrong. Couldn't have said what he's going to do, went out there and did it. So, I mean, that's a level of confidence that a man has in himself in Tyson Fury, unlike few fighters I've ever seen in my lifetime. So, I mean, you're not just dealing with the skill set and the awkwardness that he brings to the table. You're dealing with an absolute iron will and a level of confidence that he could overcome anything and beat anybody.
Yeah, Fury's the man. I can't doubt him. Like you said, I was kind of leaning towards Wilder in the rematch, but
this is also coming for a person that changed sides. I didn't like Fury years ago. He grew on me and grew on and grew on.
He grew on everyone, I think.
How do you not like this guy? It's like being a wrestling fan. Eventually, you got to root for Hulk Hogan. Eventually,
yeah. Exactly. Well, there's one other topic that I thought I wanted to bring up. Kind of my own personal frustration with the welterweight division right now, surrounding Pacquiao. Everyone's talking about Spence Crawford. Obviously, we want to see that matchup. We'll see how that plays out. But I feel like everyone's just kind of saying, "Nah, I don't want to see Pacquiao fight Spence or Crawford at this point in his career." And it's like, okay, but he has a belt. So like, do the belts just not matter? Like, is he just he's just fighting in another section of the welterweight division? Like, I want to see him versus Mikey Garcia. That's a popular name that people throw out there. But I'm frustrated by that because one, you know, it's not like Pacquiao wants, you know, he wants to prove he's the best. It's not like he's scared to fight Spencer Crawford, and he's a champ in the division as well. There's three champs right now. Why not Manny Pacquiao versus an Errol Spence or Crawford if they're not going to make that Crawford Spence matchup?
You know what, Manny Pacquiao, as we were just talking about with Tyson Fury, is just a special once in a lifetime type athlete. Obviously, so is Manny Pacquiao. I mean, he's our version of Roberto Duran. He just does very special things, and he's ageless. At this point, it's kind of like, all right, well, Spence and Crawford are the young guns. We want to see them fight each other already. They're both undefeated. They're both magnificent talents. They need to fight each other. That's the fight. But so why is a guy like Crawford or a guy like Spence looking for a 41, 42-year-old Manny Pacquiao who's got a million miles on him? I can understand that way of thinking when you guys should be at it with each other. You guys should be fighting each other. And you guys could probably, that's probably a 36-round fight. That's probably a trilogy between Spence and Crawford. That could be a real, real interesting battle. That being said, I'm on board with you where, listen, Manny Pacquiao is champion. Even though he's a part-time boxer, Manny Pacquiao is still as talented as ever, still as willing as ever. He's always willing to fight the best guys out there. And I'm sure he'd be more than willing to get in the ring with either one of those two guys. So a lot
I
of
like fans- him versus Spence, honestly, because I mean, when I look at Spence, I mean, like he didn't starch much. It's like Danny Garcia is obviously like a really good fighter and he's tough, but you know, it's not like he just walked through Danny Garcia. You know, it was like a clear win, decisive win. But you know, just don't buy that. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, keep going.
I just don't buy that Spence is going to just walk over Manny Pacquiao. Like, I think that'll be a competitive fight.
No, I mean, listen, you got to give Spence a little bit of leeway in the sense that he came back, he fought a good fighter in Danny Garcia. Listen, you couldn't hate on the guy if he came back and had a couple of easy tune-up fights after what he's been through the last year.
Right.
So that being said, I can't imagine he was firing on all cylinders against a Danny Garcia. I can't imagine he was 100%, which is still a very impressive to go out there and beat a world-class fighter and a two-division world champion like Danny Garcia in the fashion that he beat him, which was probably 12 rounds to nothing, if not 11 rounds to one.
And dominant against Mikey Garcia as well, but he didn't, it's not like he went out and just starched him within six rounds. So it's just
correct. But Mike Garcia is also a smaller guy. So as far as I know, you just brought up Manny Pacquiao and Garcia. That's a fight that honestly, I think there'll be one way traffic. I think Manny Pacquiao beats him very easily. I think Manny Pacquiao would probably shut him out 12 rounds to nothing, if not stop him late in a very similar fashion.
Manny and Spence.
What's that?
Give us Manny and Spence, right?
Wouldn't be a bad fight. I mean, listen, I'm not against it.
You're on my side. I'm just frustrated with a lot of the fans. They kind of just put Manny aside. Like they don't even want to see, they think it's just way too much for him. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, nobody's, listen, Manny Pacquiao has proven us all wrong time and time and time again. I don't know
dating back, obviously, Muhammad Ali was an underdog against Liston in the first fight, obviously against George Foreman, and a couple other fights in his career where he pulled off these upsets. But think about Manny Pacquiao's career from the perspective of how many times he was fed as the B-side opponent to guys like Marco Antonio Barrera. Even before Barrera, when he won a couple of his world titles as much lighter weights, he fought the Ring Magazine champion, the kingpin of that division, and pulled off these upsets. And obviously, nobody was picking him against Thurman, and he went out there and beat another undefeated champion in Thurman. I mean, yeah. Manny Pacquiao, De La Hoya, even going back to 2008, I had fought in Argentina that week, and all everybody was talking about in Argentina was how Oscar De La Hoya is going to destroy Manny Pacquiao, how that fight won't go two rounds, and look what happened. Once again, it's easy to be a Monday quarterback after the fight and say, oh, right. Well, Oscar De La Hoya was weight drained and he was toward the end of his career, et cetera. Listen, Oscar was still a pound-for-pound guy. He used Manny Pacquiao as a springboard to try and become the pound-for-pound guy or the top three pound-for-pound guys, and it backfired on him. But going into that fight, nobody was picking Manny Pacquiao, like nobody. So Pacquiao was pulled off upset after upset throughout a 20-year-plus career. So I got no problem with him fighting Spencer Crawford, and they can't put anything past Manny Pacquiao beating anybody.
So give me a name out of those three guys. Say they all fight this year, fantasy kind of. Obviously that will never happen, but they all fight each other this year. You have to pick a top guy in the welterweight division. Like, who's the last man standing out of those guys?
You're talking about Spence, Pacquiao, and Crawford?
Crawford, yeah.
It's tough. It really is tough. Listen, just on – I've got to go with – I've got to lean in the direction of youth. I've got – and youth and size, by the way, because Crawford – I mean, Spence is a big guy. Crawford isn't a small welterweight either. Manny obviously is really – really a guy that should be fighting at 140 and probably, if he pushed himself, could maybe even make 135 still. And he's 41 years old and he's got a million miles on him. But again, I mean, I love Manny, and the fight happens, I'm rooting for Manny. I'll always root for Manny because of these things, because of what he's overcome and how much he's given to the sport of boxing. That being said, I think that Crawford finds a way to beat both of them.
Yeah, his performance against, I mean, many of his performances, but just most recently, even against Kell Brook, is just, I mean, he really just looks like he's the guy, you know. He's just a savage in there, and he kind of has that old school feel to him as well. A lot of people kind of say that, like, he's a throwback, like a Tommy Hearns Hagler era type guy. I don't know if you'd agree with that, but he kind of has
no question about it. And he's got dog in him too. He's not just a cerebral guy that can box and he switches lefty. He can do it all. He switches lefty righty. He can fight off the back foot. He can fight off the front foot. He can counter punch. He can use his legs and move if he needs to. But he's also a dog in that ring. Okay, he doesn't just have to outbox you. He wants to hurt you, and if you hit him and you buzz him, he's going to look to hit you and buzz you right back. He's just got that different kind of mentality. Exactly. And quite honestly, you could tell me how you feel, but reading it between the lines, I honestly don't think Spence wants to fight.
Yeah, I would say
to me that Crawford is the one pushing it, and we're hearing these hiding behind money, and or maybe I'll go up to 154, or maybe I'll fight Canelo Alvarez. I think if you really read it between the lines, I feel as if Spence is just not interested in getting in the ring with Crawford.
I agree. Yeah, I think in a recent interview I saw with Spence, it seemed like he was enjoying himself a little bit in the crowd, so that was probably had a little influence. But
he at that fight, he says, "Well, I don't know what Terrence Crawford's doing here. You don't know what he's doing there.
Yeah,
going into that ring and hyping the fight. This is the fight. Aside from Tyson Fury against Anthony Joshua, that is the biggest fight that can be made in boxing right now. That will create interest even amongst casual boxing fans, where you're going to get big numbers, a big live gate, it'll do good pay-per-view numbers, and you know what, it will actually produce a good solid fight. This is styles make fights, and that's actually something that will produce a very good fight.
Yeah,
and it seems like Spence just isn't interested.
Right. Yeah, I think that's an important point. I think the fights that, obviously, like, you know, I'm a hardcore boxing fan, as are you. You know, we're interested in watching all different types of fights, but for the casual fan, the ones that are going to bring in, you know, the numbers that can be made today, you know, it's Pacquiao, Spence Crawford, just that, those three guys, sprinkle them in however you want. Then you got, you know, the heavyweights, we got Fury and Joshua, and then the other guy is Canelo, and I don't really know who you give him next. I would honestly say biggest numbers, you got to just do the Triple G trilogy. I think he washes Triple G in the third. But that being said, Triple G is another guy who's special, and he's going to get up for that last fight.
And he will, and I will. I will.
Outside of himself, what he's capable of.
The shame of the Golovkin Alvarez rivalry is that Golovkin deserved that first fight.
He did.
Okay, he won the fight. As far as the rematch, Alvarez impressed me. Alvarez came to fight, and still, you could flip a coin on who won that fight. That was a very, very good fight. But Canelo Alvarez fought a real good fight, and Golovkin was landing that jab throughout the whole course of that second fight, but he wasn't landing a lot of power shots. Like he wasn't throwing a lot of power shots. He was winning rounds with the jab, but I think I'm fine with Alvarez getting the second fight. But when you have a miscarriage of justice, like the 118-110 scorecard in the first fight that fans are always going to remember, it leaves in the back of your mind going into the second fight, it's almost like, all right, well, they got to give it to Golovkin. They owe him one. So if you have a good close competitive fight like you did, and then Alvarez gets it again, it's kind of like, all right, you know what? This is corruption at its finest. It wasn't. The second fight was a good close fight. The first fight Golovkin deserved. The shame of it is they're going to fight a third time. There's a strong probability that Alvarez knocks him out now, and that Golovkin will never own a victory over Canelo Alvarez when he should have won for sure, or possibly two.
Yeah, I agree. But that being said, I think that's like a money fight that needs to happen, because who else is Canelo going to fight at this point?
I'll tell you this. I thought Golovkin looked fantastic in his last fight. Now, of course, you got to take into consideration who he's fighting, but I saw a lot of the old Golovkin in that fight. Aside from his jab being tremendous, I saw a much more intense killer instinct version of Golovkin. Even when this kid tried to clinch, Golovkin leaned back and just bashed him. And I mean, you look mean out there. You look sharp. So that version of Golovkin against Alvarez could be interesting. I think that I'm going blank on Golovkin's trainer is Banks.
Well, yeah, you just got rid of
This was his second fight with Banks, and I think I think the teachings are starting to stick a little bit. He looked really good in that particular.
You had some head movement.
Yes, and yeah, you saw that. You saw it. There was some good and a couple of angles where he actually used his feet and he turned and he moved out of range. So I liked what I saw in that Golovkin fight. But again, the clock, the sand is running out of the hourglass on Golovkin's career. He's not getting any younger. He's got mileage on him. But he will get up for the Alvarez fight. And listen, the second fight was close. It was a good fight. These guys fight each other on even terms. So in no way, shape or form is Alvarez ever going to go out there and blow a guy like Golovkin out. Not when Golovkin has the chin that Golovkin has.
That's true. And, yeah.
And the punching power that you always have to, is always going to keep his guy honest. But Alvarez is ever improving, and Alvarez can call the shots at this stage of the game. Yes, that is the biggest fight from a name perspective, but I think Alvarez has a number of options out there. He could pretty much fight whoever he wants, and it's going to create interest.
Yeah, I believe he's thrown around some names. I believe he wants to stay at 168, so potentially Caleb Plant, which I think would be a great fight.
That's an interesting fight. And also Billy Joe Saunders.
Yeah, Billy Joe.
A very strong probability.
Billy Joe's been talking a lot of shit about Boo Boo Andre. I think he wants that fight.
Yeah, but I think if the opportunity presents itself for Alvarez from a money perspective as well, that will happen, because that was the fight that was supposed to happen before the pandemic. So I know that Alvarez plans on fighting February 27th in what's going to be an absolute two-round blowout against a guy that does not deserve the opportunity, but Alvarez deserves an easy fight once in a while, especially when he's going to stay busy and come right back in May. So December, February, May, he deserves an easy one sandwiched in between that. Mm-hmm. So I think you're going to see Alvarez handle business against this guy. I'm going blank on his name. Buddy of mine actually used to manage him, and I'm going blank on his name. February 27th, the guy's 27-2, but Eubank already destroyed him, and he doesn't go any more than three or four rounds without.
Have they already announced this, or this is rumored to be happening?
Pretty much done, and it's going to be a homecoming in Mexico. Yeah, February 27th, and then he'll come back for Cinco de Mayo, and he'll fight a bigger fight against potentially Golovkin or Billy Joe Saunders. But whoever Alvarez fights in May is going to be big.
What's the benefit of Canelo having a fight like that, other than I guess money? But does he really need a filler fight like that, or like a tune-up fight like that before another big one?
Well, this guy's a mandatory, so from that perspective, it's an excuse for him to be able to go back to Mexico, have a homecoming against a lower tier opponent, and obviously stay busy, stay sharp, and make a lot of money doing so while pleasing the fans at home who have not seen him fight on Mexican soil since, I think, Kermit Cintron, which was years back.
Years ago, yeah.
And again, you know, listen, if you could put money in your pocket and with very little risk, why not? Yeah. But listen, I'd rather see him fight than see him sit on the shelf. So, I mean,
yeah.
The fact that you got a world champion who's potentially arguably the best pound for pound fighter in the world fighting December, February, May. I mean, that's throwback. That's old school. That's the way it used to be. So I'm all about it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Can't complain about that. The more fights, the better. But those are, you know, I think everything we touched on there is really what sort of the casual fans have to look forward to in terms of those big marquee matchups. Obviously, we didn't even talk about the lightweight division with Teofimo Lopez, and, you know, there's a bunch of guys there too. Some exciting matchups to be made. I hope Lomachenko, it'll be interesting what they do with him after that. He's in a tough spot, kind of. I don't know.
He's in a tough spot, but I said he always said 135 is his absolute ceiling, and he's pushing it at 135. He belongs at 130. He's a little guy, mm-hmm. and he's a guy that could probably still make 126 if he really wanted to, but these guys are just too big and strong for him at 135, and that's why he struggles with every one of these guys, from Lenores to Pedroza to Campbell. They're all just too big for him. He's not that same dominating guy that he was in the lower weight classes.
What do you think about Ryan Garcia? Obviously, his recent win over Luke Campbell. Do you think he and Tank Davis, what do you like in that matchup? Do you think he could stop Davis, or do you think it's a little too much for him to chew on this?
Potentially, I would lean towards out of all the guys, he's not beating Lopez. Out of all the talent we have at 135 right now, I don't think he beats Haney or Lopez yet. I think that the fight that the very winnable fight for him is the fight with Davis. That being said, what I don't like about Ryan Garcia, he's very fun to watch and very exciting to watch, and he believes in his power, but he has excellent dimensions for 135 pounds. He's tall, he's long, he's rangy, mm-hmm. and he doesn't box. He wants to go out there and punch. And my worry with him is what happens when you go out there and you hit a guy in the chin over and over again and the guy doesn't go anywhere. So if he finds himself in a firefight and a slugfest with a guy that could punch like a Giovante Davis, and Davis takes his shot, he's got to box at some point, and he's not going to have that to draw upon because he's so used to slugging. So if he's losing a firefight with a guy like Davis and he can't resort to boxing, I think that's going to be a problem. So I'd like to see Garcia actually using the jab a little more and creating more opportunities for himself from a boxing perspective, because you see him constantly setting the traps and doing some of the Alvarez-like maneuvers with the hands high and punching with a guy. And
yeah,
he's definitely cerebral, but I think he's falling in love with his power too much. And you're not going to be able to knock everybody out. So he's going to have to box at some point. And with a guy like Davis, who's all 5'5" with no reach whatsoever, who's going to come right to you, that's the kind of guy that you beat up with straight shots all night if you're a guy like Ryan Garcia and you have his talent. I wouldn't be worried about trying to knock out a guy like Davis, because in doing so, you're giving him opportunity. You're fighting his fight. You're giving him chances. Where mm-hmm. if you go out there and box and you move, I think that he has a tremendous boxing capability. I think it could look similar to the way Oscar De La Hoya completely dismantled Felix Trinidad, where it looked like a world champion against a Golden Glove novice.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, with Davis, it's just like, man, like his knockout of Leo Santa Cruz is so violent. I mean, he's just got crazy.
He's had a lot of violent knockouts. Listen, the guy's a tremendous puncher. He's a huge puncher. But he's not busy out there, okay? He's not the best boxer. And you know what he's looking to do. He's looking to put pressure on you. And he doesn't even really break guys down. It's usually one-punch knockouts with him. The guy's very heavy-handed, and he's very explosive. But he's very beatable, too.
That's what I saw against Leo Santa Cruz, is like, even at moments, I didn't think Santa Cruz really had the power or pop to really keep – to really hurt Davis. But there were moments that they were exchanging, like, and Davis was very vulnerable at times. And I'm thinking, man, Ryan Garcia could probably capitalize on a moment like that. Not that he wants to stand there and just trade with him, but –
Oh, absolutely. Leo Santa Cruz couldn't hurt Davis and couldn't hit and didn't hit hard enough to really keep him second guessing or keep him honest. So Davis was able to keep walking. I mean, listen, you saw the knockout with that left uppercut. Just before that knockout, he had his head snap back violently with a straight right hand. But there's not enough on that punch to keep him honest. He walked right through it and put that uppercut on Leo Santa Cruz and ended the fight. Now, if he's taking that kind of shot from a guy like Lopez, he's not coming right back with an uppercut. He's got to regain himself. He's got to start thinking about what he's doing out there. So I think that Ryan Garcia has a very good chance to beat Davis. And I think this victory over Campbell, where he had to get off the canvas and show character, is only going to improve him. Because Campbell, you're talking about Olympic gold medalist, that has only lost to the best, and he's been very competitive in all of those fights. And right. he's never been stopped. And for Ryan Garcia to stop him and do so with a single body shot is a major statement.
Yeah, very impressive win from Garcia, and you know, a lot of exciting fights that we just talked about. And I'm excited for this year. Hopefully we can have you on again before some of these big fights or after them to talk about it. I'd love to do that. But thanks for coming on today. And, you know, I'd love you to tell the listeners maybe where they can follow you or check your stuff out on Instagram.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cut that out.
Just type in Tommy Reyno, and I think it's Tommy Razor Reyno, but Tommy Reyno on Instagram.
Yeah.
And same deal on Facebook. It's my name's on the Tommy Reyno. And I'm on Instagram all the time, always posting stuff. So you can catch me on there more often than Facebook.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Tommy. I really appreciate it. And this will be dropping soon.
All right. Anytime.